it's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, let's take a look at yesterday's game through the voice of Mark Vandermeer. We're going to go back through the important plays in this game. And after a loss, it feels like an autopsy a little bit. So buckle up. We've got about, I don't know, 7, 8. Maybe 9 important plays here we're going to go through. Texans lose 14-9 as we welcome you in on a Reaction Monday. Maybe you're just getting in your car. The themes of today so far have been this looks a lot like last year's offense. Defense kept you in the game. They made their own fair share of mistakes. And we got to figure out what happened. So first one for me, Seth, in terms of crucial plays, and there were lots of them. We won't get to all of them, but these to me were the most crucial. This wound up being the longest play of the day for the Houston Texans from scrimmage. This was Jaden Higgins with a 24-yard catch that helped set up your first points of the game.
First down for the 29, CJ fakes the give, dancing around, throwing downfield, and this is caught by Higgins across midfield, takes a hit, hangs on across the 49-yard line of the Rams. Welcome to the NFL rookie, 6'4", using every bit of that height to make a 24-yard gain into Rams territory.
Yep, that would be the longest play of the game. That would be the deepest the Texans would even attack the field. There weren't even any attempts downfield to longer than 24 yards in this game by the Houston Texans. A lot of that had to do with CJ didn't have a ton of time to do that. This was still early in the game, though, Seth, where I was encouraged. The play right before this was the one where CJ kind of spun out of the pocket and found Dalton Schultz for 11 yards for a first down.
Yeah.
So I'm watching this. I'm going, okay, now this, it's the second drive of the game. Your first drive, you went 3 and out because you had a holding penalty in there. But, you next drive, it looks like you've cleaned a few things up and you go down and you get 3 points. I was encouraged at this point in the game.
The one thing about this, and this would be a theme throughout the day, it was the pass protection was good on this, but they also kept 7 guys in to pass protect. So you've only got a couple of guys out on routes downfield and everything's got to work out just right before the Rams have had a chance to make any adjustments or anything. But even on this, I mean, Jaden Higgins ends up taking a big shot. He has to reach for the ball.
Big shot.
And CJ's kind of throwing it as he's sifting forward when he didn't need to. And there were a few plays today where CJ, he just didn't throw with the same touch that Matt Stafford does. Yeah. The one Dalton Schultz breakup on the pass to the right where Dalton Schultz had to reach behind him a little bit would have been a first down, but the pass gets broken up. He can't, he bobbles it and comes down with it while he's out of bounds. That wasn't a classic C.J. Stroud throw. That was just not quite right. The ball placement isn't necessarily there. And this is early in the game. I can't really give – even though this is a good play, I'm not seeing the ball placement specialist C.J. Stroud.
No.
And this was from a clean pocket.
Yep.
With him not really setting his feet the way that he's capable of doing.
All right. So the Texans, it's close game in the first half here. The Texans get their first break of the game up 3-0 when the Rams, the center snaps the ball over Matthew Stafford's head and Stafford recovers it deep in Rams territory. The Texans get their first good field position of the game. They would wind up getting a field goal on this drive, but man, this was a painful one because they were moving the football. They got the ball at about midfield. They'd moved it. This was their only trip into the red zone all day. The Texans, they had a 2nd and 10 at the Rams 17-yard line. No, sorry, they had a 3rd and 8 at the Rams 15-yard line, and they were moving the football, and then this happens.
Straight out of the gun, 3rd and 7 at the Rams 15. One back, Daria Dumbawale. 3 receivers to the right. CJ to throw. He's in trouble. CJ's going to go down. He's sacked. And the ball comes out. Do they pick it up? The Texans still have it. That ball came out, and Ursary, the rookie, helped make sure that it wasn't going to go to the other team.
So this was McCullough, number 2 for the Rams, coming on a corner blitz. This felt like me, Seth. You tell me if I'm right here. This felt like one of those plays that CJ, now given all this control at the line of scrimmage, should have seen something before the snap. Well, all the protection's going one way, and then this guy comes in from the left.
Sometimes they just get you with a well-dialed-up blitz, but it's the guy off the edge was CJ's responsibility.
Yeah.
And he's looking to his right. You've got the left tackle and the running back responsible for three guys. So the guy on the outside's responsible. But Ogunbowale, by the way, doesn't end up even taking care of the inside rusher either. So it was botched. Even if the edge – this is where everybody's to blame here because, yes, the edge defender is unaccounted for by design, but then Ogunbowale and Ursary don't do a good job either. So it would have been – might have been a sack regardless. It was a full-blown meltdown of – just unawareness, poor execution, everything that I was hoping that I wouldn't see, especially down as you're approaching the red zone. Yeah, it was a bad play.
Yeah, the sacks were just so punitive in this game.
That was in the red zone, wasn't it?
They were at the 15-yard line.
Yeah.
And so, ultimately that becomes a 10-play, 19-yard drive for a field goal. You get points out of it, but, you know, it's – the Rams gave you an opportunity, man. They snapped the ball over Matthew Stafford's head, and that thing went skidding back 25 yards deep into their territory. You couldn't take advantage of it. The Rams get the ball back. The Rams would end up scoring before the half. Texans put up a good front when it was goal to go. They stopped Stafford on a QB sneak, third down. And then the fourth down play here to Kyren Williams, man, I thought it looked like a play from the snap. I'm like, okay, this feels like a play the Texans might be able to stop. Unfortunately, they did not.
Fourth and goal inside the one. Stafford under center. Williams in the backfield. Stafford flips the ball to Williams. Running left. Breaks the tackle. He's in. They almost got him. They couldn't do it. Rams score the touchdown. Game tied at the moment with the extra point on the way to help the Rams take the lead.
The run fit on this, I think Petrie went underneath.
Attacking.
And if he hadn't, like if he had stayed to the front side, Azeez Alshire would have come back. Petrie. That's the one, just like some of the little details and some of the things that Petrie didn't have a great day, man.
No.
Petrie did not have a great day in pass coverage, especially. And part of that I put on the Texans. He's not a cornerback. So this is a run play. This is why you have Petrie in there. And, okay, make that play at the very least.
Yeah.
You don't. As a cornerback, he's not a cornerback. He's a safety/linebacker. And the Rams just picked on every bit of weakness you have by having Jalen Petrie out there playing the role that he does. The Rams exploited it. And they did a great job of it. And I put a lot of that more on the way the Texans – go in, like we saw this last year where Petrie is going to be a weakness in coverage at times. What are you going to do to make up for it? Apparently nothing. It's
right.
Just that's what you're going to have to live with.
But that wasn't a coverage play. To your point,
no,
like that,
right.
That play is why he is getting $13 million a year now. He's expected to make that play. Don't go
right.
Underneath the tackle, man. You're at the goal line. Like if somebody's coming
Will
in
Anderson,
to clean up, if someone's coming in to clean up your mess, they're cleaning it up 3 yards into the end zone.
Yeah, Will Anderson did a great job on that play. He took on two guys to set the edge and turn it back in, and it could have been snuffed out very quickly. Like Petrie, listen, you're not Ray Lewis. You're not allowed to. You're not J.J. Watt. You're not a guy that's allowed to go backdoor on things because you're so blazingly fast.
Yeah,
you got to come up and just bury people.
Yep. Okay, so the Texans get the ball back after that touchdown with under a minute to go in the half. This, I thought, was one of the bright spots of the game, is that the Texans went down and got some points right before the half. The big key here, though, was C.J. Stroud. They weren't in field goal range until C.J. right before the half did this.
Second down and 10 at the Ram 49. One back, Stroud in the gun. Stroud looking from the pocket, scrambling forward. C.J. on the move, running across the 40. Running out of bounds, first down and more. But 3 seconds to go. He does get them into field goal range.
Yeah, he did. And Kaimi, and you know what? Credit Kaimi, too. Kaimi looked a lot more like the Kaimi the first 5 weeks of last year, Seth, than he did from December on last year, where he was really, really shaky. So Kaimi did good things yesterday.
Did good, actually. Was it just me? Or I felt like there was way too much hang time on those kicks.
I'm not getting
like it. I'm like, man, that thing is just wafting slowly towards the goal. All right.
They went through the uprights.
All right. Yeah.
Hey, man, 50,
I'm going to be a beggar and a chooser, too.
53 yards. Dude's getting air under it from 53, going in. So.
Yeah.
So CJ, CJ with his legs, I thought was a bright spot.
That was a good scramble. There was a scramble. One of his scrambles for a first down, annoyed me a little bit because he had somebody like as it's drawn up over the middle for a first down as well, and he fled a clean pocket to do it. And like that's the decision to run when to run and when not. It's good to see him running and everything, but I give him a pass to a certain degree. He's not comfortable back there behind that offensive line, but it's really affecting his decision-making.
Yep. So the Rams come out in the second half. The Texans went into the locker room with a 9-7 lead at the half. These were the only points that were scored in the second half, though. The Rams come out of the locker room. The middle eight minutes, scored a touchdown in the last 4 minutes of the first half, and the Rams come out on their very first drive. 5 plays, 68 yards. In 2.5 minutes, just a quintessential Sean McVay marched him down the field quickly, and they take the lead.
First down at the 13, Stafford under center, takes the handoff. Swings the ball left side of the end zone, and it's caught. Allen, touchdown.
What a throw.
Davis Allen, the third-year tight end, and a beautiful pass by the veteran Matthew Stafford.
I'm sorry, you got to give credit where credit's due.
Yeah, I mean, Matt Stafford's back was the most overblown story coming into this game. He looked like there was nothing wrong with him all day long.
And part of it is, man, the Rams use play action really effectively. And this is one thing that the Texans needed to fix this year is they weren't good versus the play action last year. As many of the good things as they did, teams at times could really bait them. And on this play especially, everybody got baited. Everybody's a step late on this because they're just their eyes are in the backfield.
Yep. All right, now we're getting down to it. The most important plays of this game. Rams are driving up 14-9, looking to close out the game. You're starting to get into that range of the game, Seth. They're first and 10. They're in the red zone, the Rams are. There's about 4 minutes left. So now you're getting to that part of the game where, boy, if they score a touchdown, it's really problematic. It's a two-score game. Even if they get a field goal, the Texans need to go down and get a touchdown and a two-point conversion just to send the game to overtime. So you're in the danger zone here. The Rams' win probability here was at about 78% on this play we're about to play, and it felt like it was more than that just because they were moving the football. It's Sean McVay coaching on the other side here. But the Texans, credit their defense, credit Azeez Al-Shaair, came up with a play to give the Texans a chance.
Stafford bootlegs out to the right, looking, throwing underneath, and the ball comes out after the catch. It's loose. There's a scrum for it. Who's got it? The Texans say they have it.
It'll be first down and 10, Houston.
Houston football, Azeez Al-Shaair forced it. Texans get it on the bottom of the pile, and the Rams turn it over in the red zone as the Texans have the rock down 14-9 with 4:09 to go in this game.
Boy, that was from the get-go. Did you think that was a catch?
From the get-go, no. The replay clearly showed it was
right,
a catch.
Right. I thought, I don't know, but maybe I was just being a homer and biased, but I thought it was a catch. It looked like it looked like he got at least 2 feet down.
Yeah.
So it was more that, on the replay, it was very, very obvious. If that hadn't got turned over or overturned, it would have been egregious. And it's funny. That play was really, really good by Azeez Al-Shaair. I mean, he wasn't operating really any differently than Henry Toa was in the first quarter when he lowered his helmet trying to go for the football, and he hits Puka Nacua in the helmet.
Yeah.
I don't know what to tell these guys anymore.
Nope.
I mean, if Azeez Al-Shaair tried to just play with his chest up there, because God forbid you end up trying to make a football play, he does the right thing and he pops the ball out. It's a really good play. That's all. The one big thing that could have flipped the tables yesterday was if the Texans were able to create just one more turnover. Obviously, I mean, you can say that in any NFL game, but that was one little moment where you're like, oh yeah, the Texans need more of that. They need to go back. They need to be sure that this year they're one of the leading teams at taking the ball away, especially as long as the offense is playing the way they are.
No kidding. So the Texans get the ball back at their own 19-yard line, and they start to put a little something together on the short passing game and on the back of Nick Chubb, who busts out a 10-yard run, who busts out a 9-yard run, gets a yard off the left guard. There's a penalty that puts the Texans in first and 15, and then they're in second and 11, third and 11. They throw an incomplete pass, CJ does, to Jalen Knoll, but they get a penalty. They get a roughing the passer penalty on Kobe Turner, just a silly penalty that was definitely a penalty in today's NFL. So now you're inside the two-minute warning, and the Texans are moving the football. CJ hits Dario Gumbawale for 16 yards to get into Rams territory. Seth, now you got all three timeouts, and you're at a point where, like, okay, now we got to kind of manage things to make sure we're moving the ball slowly enough to where we don't give the ball back to Matthew Stafford. You know, you got all three timeouts. The clock is no longer an issue. You've got first and 10 at the Rams 25-yard line after the 16-yard pickup by Dario Gumbawale. So you are moving the football. You got a little something going. You got all three of your timeouts. You're in the catbird seat, and then this happens.
Empty backfield for CJ on first and 10 at the Ram 25. Stroud gets the snap. CJ looking, throwing underneath, and the ball comes out. The ball comes out. Dare had it. The ball popped out. The Rams have it. They recover. Fisk running away with it to the sideline to celebrate.
Okay. I mean, it was a hell of a punch out by Landman.
Yeah, well, textbook. You know, Kevin Harlan points out that that's only a Gumbawale's second fumble in his career.
Yeah.
I would point out he's had 166 carries.
Yeah,
in his career.
Okay. I'm glad you looked it up. I'm like, I love Dare, but like, he touched the ball a lot.
You know, like 50 or so receptions too. So it's not like that. It's not like some gleaming. Derrick Henry went like 378 carries at one point without fumbling the football. So the fact that Dare Gumbawale was a key feature on that drive is more of a concern than anything else. And he had a really nice, nice reception. The play before that. But I hated to be in that moment where this entire game, I'm looking and Nick Chubb's got 13 carries in the game. Looked good, but they only felt comfortable giving him 13 carries. Whatever's going on with Joe Nixon, they need to airlift him out of Tibet or wherever the hell he is and do something illegal medically with
Chubb
him to get him back.
Looked good on that drive.
Yeah.
That drive, like, and I saw they pulled him out and the water person came over to him and they're spraying water in his mouth and they stopped and he's like, more water, more water. So I don't know if he was winded or something like that, but there were some weird personnel decisions. I think you're right. I love Dario Gumbawale. His teammates obviously love him. They voted him a captain. That Dario Gumbawale is the one that's catching balls for. And I know he caught a game-winning touchdown against the Jags last year. But, yeah, you have Nico Collins. This is one where I'm like, Nico Collins had 5 targets all day in this game.
I love Jesus Sanchez's affable demeanor as well. There's times where I'm like, all right, can we do more than smile?
Right.
Is this what the hell's going on here?
Now,
that's where they are with the running back.
Yeah, it's. I mean, Damian Pierce is just not usable right now. That's my thing, Seth. Real quick, sorry. Do you have Dario Gumbawale out here catching passes and fumbling the football? You're targeting Damian Pierce on the drive before that. You drafted Woody Marks in the 4th round specifically because he's a very good pass catcher. Why is Damian getting a target over Woody Marks?
Why is Damian getting a target and just batting it away? He's like Omar Asik out there. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know, man. Yeah. I feel like they went into the game thinking, well, we're going to be running back by committee. And in a Bobby Slowick-type fashion, they stuck to that game plan.
Ugh.
And the drive was going well. I don't mean to take away from that. But I'm also thinking about, great, you're getting down into the red zone. You haven't scored a touchdown yet today. I need more than this, man. And I need more than Dario Gumbawale fumbling to lose the game for him.
Dude, 5 targets for Nico Collins all day. Nico Collins, he had less than 6 targets last season in 2 games. The one that he went out of the the game with a hamstring injury in the first quarter and the one where he was taken out in the first quarter so he could get over 1,000 yards for the season in Week 18. And even in that Week 18 game, he had five targets in the first quarter. He had five targets all game yesterday.
This was, you talk about being outcoached. The Rams were thoroughly and completely outcoached. Yeah. And it starts with, the Texans were thoroughly outcoached by the Rams. And it starts with the sloppiness overall. Defensive penalties are usually aggressive penalties, and including encroachments, I'll give them that. But Darrell Taylor jumps off sides when the Rams are just trying to draw them off sides at the end of the third quarter.
There's 22 seconds on the game clock, or on the game clock. There's 27 seconds on the play clock. So the Rams can walk over to the sidelines if they want to and just end the quarter. And a lot of teams do that. And as they're lining up, I'm going, man, this is so smart by McVay. Like, he's got nothing to lose by just standing up there and trying to draw. And I'm Clint and Reggie and Patrick Parker and I are all up here, and we're looking around the room going, they're just trying to draw him. And you can tell Stafford comes up to the line and does that thing where he's like, you know, doing the hard count, the hut-hut, and he backs away for a little. Like, he's clearly trying to draw them off sides.
It wasn't like they hurried up to the line and did it or anything and they got him there.
It's so obvious. And yes. Darrell Taylor jumps off sides with 2 seconds left in the quarter. And I'm like, this is the dumbest stuff.
They looked like such a dumb football team yesterday.
Yes.
They looked really, really dumb. They just looked, I don't even feel bad saying it.
They,
it's amazing
dumb
that the score was as tight as it was.
Oh, my God.
Because in the second half especially, Matt Stafford clearly doesn't have a herniated brain because, man, he knew exactly where he wanted to go with the ball. He was getting rid of it very, very quickly. And it was just, they were at a Chinese buffet there at the end. It was 14.99, all you can eat, and we're just going to take what we want.
Man.
And we'll take our time doing it. You know, just crazy.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly
why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, let's get to some acknowledgments for the weekend here. We'll do a little acknowledge me. We do it every Monday at about this time. Big performances from the weekend. Because I'm so angry with that game yesterday and with the Astros of late, none of them are getting acknowledged. Sorry, guys. None of you will hear this. Sorry. Instead, I'm forced to acknowledge the Ravens and the Bills last night. Acknowledging both teams because that was one of the most watchable games without a dog. The only dog in the fight that I had was the fear that I have over facing the Ravens 4 weeks from yesterday. They lost this game, by the way. If you went to bed, a lot of Bills fans left the stadium. They were down.
Oh, no.
Yeah, they were, and Josh Allen pointed that out in his post-game interview. But the Bills scored 16 points in the last few minutes of this game to come back and win 41-40. It was an incredible game with some huge offensive performances. Derrick Henry had 18 carries for 169 yards and 2 touchdowns. It felt like every carry he had, he was rumbling for at least 15 yards. The problem was, Seth, they were up 40-32 with under 4 minutes to go in the game. I mean, just this is classic Lamar and Derrick Henry in a game where they've scored 40 points already. Man, just don't turn it over. Just lean on them and keep running the football and credit the Bills. They force a fumble with Derrick Henry. They get their hand in there. They poke the ball out. He fumbles it. Josh Allen takes him down, and they end up scoring a touchdown, but they don't get the 2-point conversion. They're able to get the ball back though, and they go down and kick a field goal from Matt Prater, who flew in on a red eye like the day before the game or something like that. Kicks a game winning field. It was an awesome game, 41-40. And I'm watching that game. I'm going, I do not want to be on the field with either of those teams right now.
The Ravens had a 98% win probability with 3 minutes and 10 seconds.
It sounds low, actually.
before Derrick Henry, who I was just talking about, he had that long stretch without a fumble. You know, Derrick Henry loses a fumble. And they even when they took possession there, the Bills only had a 17% win probability.
Yeah, yeah. But Josh Allen, man. You're defending.
Josh Allen, he turned it into like the old Tom Brady dynamic of like, man, no matter how bad a blowout looks like for the Patriots, yeah, on a Monday night game, even if the Patriots are losing by 21, you got to stay watching until the end of the game.
Got to. All right, I hate doing the text.
Disappointed in Bills fans. Wow.
Yeah, a lot of them left. I was half paying attention. I was half show prepping and half watching the game, so I didn't. But after the game, that was a big topic. Tarico made a wisecrack about it. Like, those who chose to stay around. And Josh Allen said something when he was getting interviewed by Melissa Stark after the game about it, too. About, hey, you know, for the people who stayed around. So, yeah, it was a thing for sure. Man, Texans, I hate that you're forcing me to acknowledge other people around the NFL. Like Aaron Rodgers. Got to acknowledge him, man. First game as a Pittsburgh Steeler. 22 of 30. 244 yards. 4 touchdowns. No interceptions, and the Steelers beat the Jets, his former team, at MetLife Stadium. He'll be in the Pettycast tomorrow. I wasn't able to pull the audio of him saying how much he loved beating everybody with the Jets, not just Aaron Glenn, who, by the way, if we recall, had Aaron Rodgers come in, meet with him face-to-face to tell him, we really don't want you to be our quarterback anymore. Those 4 touchdown passes had to feel good for Aaron Rodgers yesterday, I would say.
They had to feel good for him. He was particularly petty after the press conference. He was given a chance to take a shot at Aaron Glenn specifically, and he just said something like, I just like beating everybody in the Jets organization. Yeah. I mean, Justin Fields, though, he looked good.
Yeah.
Maybe end up, I'm curious to see what we see out of Justin Fields here.
Yep.
I mean, just like I'm very, very curious to see what Daniel Jones turns into this year. Because, man, I warned all of you. I warned all of you that Shane Steichen might get the very best out of Daniel Jones.
I need to see him against a team that hasn't quit on their coach in week 1. Yeah. I'm gonna pump the brakes on Daniel, and I've got him on the list here. Well, I'll acknowledge him. Daniel Jones was excellent. You're right, Seth. He was great yesterday. Certainly, he had an effort that we never saw from Anthony Richardson last year. Not one time did Anthony Richardson go out there and go 22 of 29 for 272, not turn the ball over, throw a touchdown pass, beautiful touchdown pass to Michael Pittman in that game, and then vulture a couple touchdowns from Jonathan Taylor. Two touchdowns. I have Jonathan Taylor on one of my teams. But Daniel Jones, 7 carries, 26 yards, and a couple short touchdowns down there at the 1 yard line. Daniel Jones got the Jalen Hurts treatment yesterday. You know, and I say that because, as you point out, Shane Steichen is the, Jalen Hurts' former OC. Daniel Jones looked tailor-made for what Shane Steichen wants to do offensively.
Like when Shane Steichen, when he has a quarterback who can run some or a lot, and he uses the RPOs, he uses every bit of a quarterback's athleticism to make defenses uncomfortable and indecisive. And when you've got Jonathan Taylor behind, I want to say it's almost like a muted version, a very, very, well, maybe not that, a muted version of Lamar Jackson and Derrick Henry.
Yep.
It's that you make your offensive line better, and the Colts already have a good offensive line, and they've got good skill, position players too. So whenever you think of Daniel Jones or what his ceiling is, I think Shane Steichen's got a good chance of getting him to his ceiling.
Yeah, yesterday was a great start, no doubt about it. All right, I'm going to acknowledge Peter Schrager here. We're not a huge Schrager shop here, but this was a big thing on Friday after we were off the air on Get Up, is that Ryan Clark pulled the I'll let the audio do the talking here. This was Peter Schrager. They're talking about the Thursday night football game here and CeeDee Lamb, and did CeeDee Lamb lose the game for the Dallas Cowboys. This was Peter Schrager on the set with Ryan Clark and a couple of other players.
2nd and 11. It was the one target. He runs the out route.
You wake up this morning saying A.J. Brown had a better day than CeeDee Lamb?
You know what you wake up saying, though? A.J. Brown's team is 1-0.
Of course.
Right,
I get it.
But the thing is this, though, and we shouldn't do this on TV. And so I apologize if people think this is rude. That's the non-player.
Oh, stop. Lamb is...
Let me tell you why. I'm not saying...
I'm not looking at fantasy football. Ryan, I'm not... Don't belittle me like that. I could come in and say, as 3X players are saying one thing and give an alternative perspective, that maybe CeeDee Lamb did play well. And
Peter, what I need for you to do is not get mad and let me finish for once.
Okay, go on.
It wasn't about you. It was going to be about me.
For once.
That's, wait a second. It wasn't about you. That exchange started off with, that's the non-player in you.
Now, Ryan Clark went on to, Ryan Clark, his explanation, I'll paraphrase the explanation because I'm curious to get your take on this, Seth. His take he went on to have was that CeeDee Lamb, despite having seven catches for 110 yards, I'm sure was sitting in his car stewing on the way home about the three drops. You know, Ryan Clark said, I could have had 12 tackles and two picks in a game, but if I miss a tackle that loses the game for my team, my family knows not to come near me for the next 2 days.
This is the problem, because I think in a lot of ways, Ryan Clark, it was, when people were discussing it, I could tell a lot of people hadn't necessarily even watched the clip, because they were saying that Ryan Clark had said the classic, oh, you don't know because you didn't play the game. I think where he was going with it was, what he could have said was, this is how it is from a player's perspective.
Yep.
I'm going to show you, I want to tell you how it is from a player's perspective. The problem is, twice there, he treated Peter Schrager like a child.
Yeah.
Like, he said, first, that's the non-player in you. And then he said, what you need to do is be quiet and let me finish, or whatever he said like that. It's kind of, it was this whole superior tone about it, I think, that was off-putting.
I'm glad you
said
that.
But I don't think it was, he wasn't as bad as saying, like, just trying to end the argument by saying, you don't know because you didn't play the game.
Right, right. No, it's, I went and watched the whole segment because I wanted to make sure, because everybody was talking about this thing, and Ryan Clark was taking some, and I'm with you, like, his delivery could have been way, way better. I thought his take afterwards was, it truly was one that only a player could have. Like, there's a ton of stuff that I defer to you on as the former player on the show that I know I have no clue what the dynamics are like in a locker room after a loss or the interpersonal part. There are things where there are things that truly only players know about this that we don't. But Ryan Clark, at the beginning of this segment, the very beginning of this segment, they were going around the table getting takes on the Cowboys losing that game. Orlovsky gives a very measured take. I forget who the other player was on the set there, gave a very measured take. Schrager gave a very measured analytical take that we'll hear the end of here before Clark leads into his take with this.
You look at what Booker did. You look what those guys got, and you know, all them out there. They were moving that Eagles defensive line, which we heard all offseason was going to be this great, great advantage for Philadelphia.
I know what you want.
Why?
See,
what
is these it? Three acted like they ain't never been on Get Up after a Cowboys game. But I'm here for you, Greeny. That's why I wore my blue. If those balls are caught, we're talking about Dak Prescott playing as well as we've ever seen him play.
Good enough, Ben. So all three guys, Teddy Bruschi was the other one. Teddy Bruschi, Orlovsky, and Peter Schrager all give their take on the game. They were all solid takes from what I remember. And in comes Ryan Clark going, these three guys that just gave their opinions, they're not as good as me, because I've been on, you know, like, they're acting like they've never been. Like, he can't help but take a shot at his three co-hosts in delivering his opinion right there.
It's a classic, no. And then the third thing I forgot to mention, like, him starting off by saying, that's the non-player in you, and then claiming afterwards, hey, don't make it about you.
Yeah.
I was going to be talking about myself. Like, all right, man, I see what you're trying to do here. It's just, Ryan Clark, it feels like he's apologizing to a colleague or somebody, RG3's wife, like every 3 weeks these days.
Yeah, he tweeted, and it's funny too, because he tweeted out an apology. I'll be curious if he's on today and he happens to be on with Schrager, if he apologized. I don't really care one way or the other. It's just a thing on talk radio. And I'm not one of these people saying ESPN needs to fire Ryan Clark. Like, whatever, okay?
But he's following a good game plan.
It's disrespectful. It's disrespectful, but it's not a firing offense. Like, it's it'll play itself out. It's not like he's harassing somebody or something like that.
Yeah.
So I'll be curious. He tweeted out an apology literally, like, in the middle of plays in the Chargers. He's live tweeting the Chargers-Chiefs game. He's like, you know, like, oh, Marion Hampton up the middle for 3 yards. Boy, he had some room on the outside. And then the next tweet, I'd like to apologize after an incident on and off camera, he said today.
Yeah,
there was
an
off camera.
On and off camera. Yeah. What would happen off camera?
Me
that's
too.
The interesting part.
Yeah. Me too. All right, so that's acknowledge me. I do want to get to one other thing that we had in Acknowledge Me. Maybe it's better suited for the Pettycast tomorrow, but I do want to touch on it real quick. What are the etiquette rules about home run balls in the outfield? I want to run this past Pope Zaza. I feel like the czar of common sense is Pope Zaza. What are the rules on snagging a home run ball? Because boy, this turned into an incident this weekend. And CJ Stroud C.J. Stroud talking like we've not heard him talk after football games yesterday. A couple things in particular I want to circle back to. We'll do that coming up next.
Yeah.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
I take just negative plays. I think it's kind of obvious. You know, we can't shoot ourselves in the foot consistently and expect to win. And that starts with me, you know, with a lot of different things. I got to get rid of the ball better and, you know, use my legs maybe a little more. But, yeah, I think, you know, there's a lot of hope still. We did a lot of good things. You know, it's a really good defense, a really good team. But I definitely think we could have won. But just you can shoulda, woulda, coulda all day. We didn't deserve to win that game because we didn't do the right things. So when you come out NFL lollygagging and you know not going through the motions, that kind of happens. So I think we'll be all right. But I think it's a good wake up call for it.
That is not a throwaway line right there. Lollygagging, going through the motions at the end of that right there.
Whenever CJ. A 23 or 24 year old man uses the word lollygagging,
he's serious.
That's who was gagging on lollies yesterday is what I need to know. What who the hell are the lollygaggers? What is this?
Name
what
names.
Is this about? And again, when I'm like, look, when you got the starting quarterback talking about how you can't be lollygagging around, and it's a game where you have 11 penalties, and not just like not kind of aggressive penalties, illegal shifts, delay of games. Almost another delay of game in the fourth quarter.
Yep.
You know, CJ just trying to get the snap off at times. It looked like a shoddy operation. It looked like Bobby Slowick's first game against the Ravens a couple years ago.
Same number of points. Same number of points. 9 points.
Yeah, you don't score a single point in the second half. You don't score a touchdown all day long. And a lot of it, just like last year, comes back to, wow, the offensive line doesn't seem to be blocking all that well. C.J. Stroud pressured on 41% of his passes.
Yep.
Which is, last year, C.J. Stroud had one of the highest pressure rates in the league at 43% or whatever it was.
It was 39% last year.
39% on
39% because that's what Mahomes got pressured in the Super Bowl. Remember that? That was like, hey, the amount of times Mahomes is running around, that was a normal day for C.J. Stroud last year.
C.J.'s was actually higher on the season
last year. Yeah, it was like 39 to 38 or something like that.
Okay,
if I remember.
So it's bad. It was bad.
Yep.
Yeah, and I mean, there's times where I can criticize C.J.'s decision at times to either run when he had a clean pocket, but at the same time, and I don't want to make excuses for everybody all over the place, but I don't know how he's going to develop pocket presence when playing behind that level of pass protection. It gets worse and worse as quarterbacks have to deal with it year after year.
Here's one more from C.J. Stroud that I thought was really interesting after the game yesterday. Why do you feel like today was a wake-up call?
I just think the way we practiced this week, I think we could have practiced better. I think, you know, I love the confidence we have, but there's a, I don't know, I always say there's like a type of mindset is like, did I do enough? And I think it's a healthy way to be because then you'll probably do more. So I just, for me, you know, preparing, I got to do a better job. And I also got to hold my guys accountable, you know, for that one exotic look. And it's the first game of the year. We got a lot of exotic looks we did not expect. They did too, but they made the play. So you can come up with a million excuses. We got to just be better.
Okay.
Yeah.
Didn't practice great all week.
Didn't practice great all week. Saw a lot of exotic looks that they didn't expect. And I think that, again, comes back to first-time offensive coordinator where, yeah, you expect to see exotic looks you didn't expect. If there's one thing that you can predict, it's that unpredictable things will happen.
Yeah.
And pinning down exactly which unpredictable things are going to happen, that's the hard part of it. The Rams seemed way more ready for that on their offensive side of the ball than the Texans did. And I'm not like, you know, throwing away all hope. It was ugly yesterday. Lots of coordinators look ugly in their first couple of games as coordinator. Vic Fangio has been in the league for decades, and the Eagles' defense did not get off to a hot start last year.
No.
And Vic Fangio's first year as a defensive coordinator, they end up being the best defense in the league. So there's plenty of room for improvement, obviously. The question is, all right, over these next couple of weeks, how much improvement do we see?
Yeah. Tampa Bay on Monday night, and then Jacksonville, who, you know, they – it's Carolina on the other side, but they looked impressive in their game against the Panthers. That's week three. So, and that'll be a short week because you're playing Monday night against Tampa and you're going on the road to face the Jags after that.
What did the, did you box score watch Travis Hunter at all?
I heard on the way home last night, I was listening to one of the national like rundowns, like it was halftime, I think, of the Bills and the Ravens. I'm listening. And I think he had 8 targets in the game. He had like 4 catches, like 4 short catches,
had,
I think.
He had 6 receptions for 33 yards.
Yeah, it was a lot of
that's not dunk. Redefining the game of football.
No, not at all.
I don't know how many tackles he had. I know he had at least 1 tackle early in the game,
yep.
But yeah.
Yeah.
That's been taken off the board. I don't know. That must have been a special teams tackle.
Yeah, that's so the game of football.
Oh no, yeah, he finished the game with 1 tackle and 6 catches for 33 yards. I'm redefining the game.
I'm looking at the definition of football and it's the same as it was yesterday morning. It's not been redefined. I'm looking it up on Webster's right now. Hey, you saw this thing with this they're calling her Philly Karen on the internet.
Yeah.
This woman who if you missed it, there was a Marlins Phillies game in Miami, where there were Philly fans in the upper deck. Harrison Bader hits a home run, and the ball lands in the row right in front of these Phillies fans, one of whom is this older woman in a Phillies jersey. A man who appeared to be with his family there, we know he was there with his son at the very least, kind of runs down the same row, ball is rolling around on the floor in the row right there, and he picks it up. As there's 5 people reaching for it.
He picks it up in front of the Karen, Philly Karen.
Yeah. He reaches down, picks it up, and walks back over to his seat and plunks it down in his son's glove. He went and got that home run ball. The Karen comes running over and gets right up in his face saying, "You took my ball. That was my ball." There were cameras where you could actually hear her saying that to him. And the guy was surprised. He was shocked. He had this look on his face like, "Why are you yelling at me?" Ultimately, he decides to just take the ball from his 10-year-old son, who was there for his birthday, by the way, and give the ball to her just because I don't feel like dealing with this crazy person.
No. In no way, shape, or form did she have first dibs on that ball.
Thank you,
like,
Pope.
He didn't jostle her out of the way. There was no, am I wrong? There was no physicality involved whatsoever.
None.
The ball was in front of her. If somebody had been sitting in that seat in front of her, would have been that person's ball. I don't know why there's any question about that.
Yeah.
There's no way in which baseball has ever operated is that ever been a thing. The guy ran down. The guy didn't knock anybody out of the way or anything. Is just that's his ball.
Yes.
And I don't know where she gets off like acting like somehow she's entitled to that just because it's in front of her. But then the really ugly side of this came from the people that decided they had to also criticize the father. For not protecting his son.
Yes.
I'm like, dude,
okay.
This guy, you get caught unaware. A woman is assailing you. The last thing you want in the world is like, listen, I don't want to go viral for all the wrong reasons.
Okay.
Whatever, lady. Here you go.
Okay, so that's good. So this is basically a preview of the Pettycast for tomorrow, I think. We got to revisit this tomorrow because there's great audio that goes with this thing. And it ended up working out for the kid, too. He got an autographed bat, got to meet Harrison Bader. It all worked out, but man.
If the guy had run in down that aisle and there was a kid, if Philly Karen was a child.
Yeah.
It's still the right thing to do would have been for him to hand it to the kid.
Yes.
But even in that situation, it's still, man, like there was no jostling whatsoever.
I agree.
He had a clear path to the ball.
This is why you're Pope Zaza and everybody else is not. Good ruling, I would say. Seth, antibodies to you, my friend.
Antibodies, and tomorrow will be a glorious day.
It will. It's going to be a better day tomorrow, everybody, I promise, because the Astros, I don't believe, play tonight, and we got Monday Night Football tonight, so that's all good. All right, and you can hear that game right here on Sports Radio 610. All right, we are done. We are out of time. John Harris, Mark Vandermeer are up next with Texans Monday.
it's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.